Welcome to Outdoor by 4 Magazine's audio edition of issue 55. For those unfamiliar with Outdoor by 4, the magazine began its journey as a fully independent, vehicle-based adventure and outdoors lifestyle publication in 2013. Since that time, Outdoor by 4 has been the catalyst for expanding the reach of overland and vehicle-based adventure travel into the outdoors market, with a focus not only on the mode of travel, whether a 4x4, motorcycle, bicycle, or by foot, but also on the adventures themselves and the people who live them. In this issue, you'll hear a sampling of stories from Outdoor by 4's print edition, including Water in the Desert, a journey along the iconic Mojave Road, Underground Cities and Fairy Chimneys, a journey through Cappadocia, Camping with Cats, the ins and outs of outdoors adventure with feline friends, and Driven by a Dream, the story of Mark A. Smith and his life of adventure. There are also a variety of additional stories in this issue you can read by picking up a copy or by subscribing and receiving a copy as part of your subscription order at www.outdoorx4.com. We hope you enjoy this issue of Outdoor by 4 Magazine. The Dispatch by Frank Ludwell, Editor-in-Chief. Vehicle-based adventure travel. I recently received a press release announcing a new book of which the author uses this term in a way to perpetuate himself and the content of his material, all while incorrectly interchanging its meaning as part of overlanding, rather than the other way around, to complement his message. When I read this, I couldn't help but respond to the PR firm promoting this new book and clarifying for them the difference between vehicle-based adventure travel and overlanding. And it got me to thinking it'd make for a good discussion topic in this issue's dispatch. What exactly is overlanding, and how is it different from vehicle-based adventure travel? In my nearly 20 years of publishing content in this arena before overland became such a trend, I have always defined overland travel as akin to backpacking, but with a vehicle. If you've ever been on a backpacking trip, it's common to pack your tent, sleeping bag, food, clothing, basically everything you need for self-sufficient travel while exploring by foot. That's pretty much what overlanding is. It's essentially self-sufficient travel by vehicle, whether four wheels or two wheels, while exploring remote backcountry destinations and doing so responsibly while following tread lightly principles and thoughtfully enhancing the vehicle as necessary to overcome reasonable challenges. If you built out a van or equivalent and are living out of it, traveling from one location to another and doing so in remote areas, more than likely that's overlanding. Vehicle-based adventure travel, on the other hand, is much broader in scope and is more focused on the vehicle merely being a tool for exploration or as a means to enjoy car camping, as well as any host of outdoors activities. Think hiking, mountain biking, fly fishing, rock climbing, etc. But the focus being on those experiences and not the vehicle itself. This seems to be where the confusion is and why I've outlined it as such. In short, overlanding is certainly a part of vehicle-based adventure travel, but doesn't define what vehicle-based adventure travel is. And to affirm this, ask someone with a prominently sized YouTube channel if overlanding is car camping, and they'll probably scoff at you and say it absolutely is not. Outdoor by 4 Magazine's focus has been to bring the vehicle-based community, which includes overlanding, together with outdoor recreationalists, including hikers, mountain bikers, rock climbers, those who enjoy paddling, and virtually everything else most of us enjoy while being outdoors. Hopefully, through our editorial, you'll be inspired and engaged to step out your front door and experience the world around you, whether it's self-sufficient travel, such as overlanding, or going for a weekend vehicle-based adventure.
This audio edition of Outdoor by 4 is brought to you by Radius Outfitters. We all know how messy life and vehicles can get. That's why Radius offers rugged storage systems that protect and organize your essentials. From customizable storage boxes to kitchen organizers, Radius gear makes life at camp easier, so you'll be ready for anything, whether cruising with the family in the desert or kicking it solo in the mountains. Check them out today by visiting radiusoutfitters.com.
Water in the Desert, The Iconic Mojave Road by Kelly McTeague. There's not supposed to be this much water in the desert. That thought races through my mind as I slowly wade deeper into the Mojave River. It is already above my knees and I haven't yet reached the deepest part. We are running the Mojave Road from river to river, the Colorado River to the Mojave. It started with water and now it's ending with water. I just hope it isn't an ending that involves a recovery. I checked the USGS flow gauge 4 days earlier, but part of me was hoping it would be shallower where we were crossing. No such luck. We have two Jeeps, a Land Rover, and two off-road trailers, and we need to get all of them across without doing any lasting damage. It all started months earlier around an imaginary campfire at Overland Expo West in Flagstaff, Arizona. My wife and I had gladly volunteered to lead a small group of friends on a multi-day run of the Mojave Road. We love the route for its history, scenery, and remoteness, and we had recently been contemplating the role of historic trails and roads, such as this one through the Mojave Desert, in the migrations and settlements of the West over time. We wanted to run it again to refresh our memories and see it with that historical perspective in mind. We also were excited for the company of our friends who would be experiencing it for the first time. For many in the off-road community, the Mojave Road is a bucket list trip, an iconic off-road route comprising more than 140 miles of sand, dirt, and rocks through the Mojave Desert. It is home to incredible geological formations, unique fauna and flora, plenty of historic mining and ranching relics, and a surprising variety of terrain from craggy mountain passes to sand dunes and dry lake beds. What we now know is the Mojave Road started as an ancient travel corridor across the desert. Recent rock art dating suggests that prehistoric humans frequented the area as much as 15,000 years ago. The current road roughly follows a footpath from spring to spring that has been used for thousands of years, first by ancient inhabitants, then by historically more recent native peoples, including those of the Mojave and Chemehuevi tribes. They were followed by early European explorers, homesteaders, the U.S. military, and the U.S. Postal Service. Once the railroads came to the Mojave around the turn of the 20th century, the then wagon route fell into disuse. Although miners and ranchers continued to use parts of the route over the ensuing decades, it took years of hard work by Dennis Casebeer and friends in the 1970s and 1980s to reestablish and preserve the Mojave Road as an off-road route. Casebeer's guidebook, Mojave Road Guide, An Adventure Through Time, is an absolute must for anyone navigating it, as are the cairns placed along the road to show the way. After airing down and selecting a rock for Traveler's Monument, located approximately 100 miles to the west, we leave the Colorado River and settle into a rhythm through the sandy wash that is the start of the Mojave Road. A quick stop for lunch, a short walk to check out petroglyphs, and we're focused on our first campsite. I'm relieved as we pull into Balancing Rock Camp. We have it all to ourselves. It was a very early start for our group this morning, and rolling into an empty camp with time for a little relaxation is a real treat. From atop the Balancing Rock outcrop, we watch the sun set and the moon rise, catch up on life, and talk about the road. Mel, our first-time off-roader, admits the trip has already been way better than she expected. We all fall asleep under the soft light of a full moon. This is going to be a good trip. The route from Balancing Rock to Fort Paiute starts with a series of fun roller coaster-like ups and downs, weaving through washes and low ridges. The rigs remind me of prairie dogs as they disappear and pop back into view while we make our way through this section. As we transition to the long open range climb towards Fort Paiute, we see the trail snake its way through the desert for many miles in front of us. Near the fort, the trail becomes very rocky and slow going, but the views are amazing. We check out the spring and talk about how the forts along the Mojave Road weren't built to protect settlers, wagon trains, or the mail, but rather to secure the water sources. In the arid west, if you control the water, the rest falls into place. A detour around a washout on the Paiute Pass feels remote, but has plenty of abandoned mines, old mining equipment, and half-standing structures to remind us of the hardy souls who sought to build a life in this hardscrabble desert. We stop at one such outpost to make lunch and wonder what daily life must have been like out here. As we rejoin the original route below the washout, we enter Landfair Valley. We navigate sections of narrow and sandy two-track that sit a few feet below the surrounding land, as if we are driving through a trench. Joshua trees closely line the trail, and we add more desert pinstriping to our rigs. Winding along this remote track through one of the largest Joshua tree forests in the country is close to off-roading perfection to me. The rest of the group apparently agrees. The radio chatter includes plenty of oohs and ahs and wows. We check out the Mojave school bus, completely oblivious to the fact that we are some of the last people to see it in that location. The Mojave Desert Land Trust removed the bus shortly after our trip. There are rumors, however, that it may reappear someday just down the road. High on my list for this trip is a visit to the Landfair Buttes. We hadn't made it there on prior visits, and I'm excited to see this concentration of petroglyphs and the natural well at their base. The site does not disappoint, with hundreds of geometric and anthropomorphic petroglyphs and an amazing solid rock well that was several feet in diameter and full of water just a few feet down. Yet another reliable water source in the Stark Desert. It is easy to see why this is such a special gathering place for early inhabitants. Heading to our second camp, the beauty of the desert is on full display. The shadows are long, the horizon is full of colors, and the chola bushes are backlit by the setting sun as if they are some sort of electrified field of art. The jackrabbits are everywhere and appear curious about our strange parade of rigs. In contrast to the night before, the temperature drops quickly with the sun, and we are all happy for the Peruvian hats Mel and Colin brought for the group from the recent trip. Bellies full of superb tacos made by Marissa and Dave on a Timbertusk adventure scuttle, we inch closer to the warm campfire and relive the day, not wanting it to end. Owls serenade us as we turn in for the night. It is a perfect ending to one of those perfect days. We start the next day by dropping into Watson Wash on our way to Rock Spring. The deeply rutted and relatively steep trail into the wash lets us flex our suspensions. The cab of my Jeep stays completely level as the wheels articulate through the ruts and my tires remain in solid contact with the dirt. In a way, it is too easy, but still fun. Up until now, we have had the trail to ourselves, but we encounter a group of a dozen trucks in Watson Wash and several other groups visiting Rock Spring. After guiding one group back onto the correct footpath to the rock house, we explore the Dry Falls, an 1864 inscription by one of the soldiers stationed there, petroglyphs, a metate, and the small pools of water in and around the spring. The amount of wildlife tracks is amazing. For the tenacious desert wildlife and vegetation, life is just a little easier around the Mojave Springs. The Mojave Road mailbox, Marl Springs, Government Holes, and the famous Sandy Whoops round out our day, and we continue encountering many groups of travelers in the process. When two groups join us at mailbox, Colin is talked into an impromptu tour of their Patriot X1 GT trailer, and Dave answers questions about his heavily customized M101 A1 trailer. Both trailers perform flawlessly throughout the entire trip. Back on the trail, we come upon a large group of trucks we saw back at Watson Wash, this time with one of them broken down on the trail. They tell us they have the situation in hand, and we barely squeeze by on our way to our camp. I don't know if it's the rising popularity of overlanding and off-roading, but there are substantially more people on the Mojave Road than my last full traverse. It is great to see people getting out and enjoying this amazing landscape, but it is a good reminder of the importance of treading lightly. I bake cornbread in a Dutch oven, and Colin makes his famous chili over the campfire as we watch yet another spectacular sunset. We have a hard time picking the best part of the trip so far, but Landfair Valley, the desert light, and the overall remoteness are common on everyone's list. We explore the lava tubes in the morning and cross more sandy washes on Soda Lake, a dry lake bed at the Mojave River's terminus. It is often referred to as Dry Soda Lake, and thankfully it lives up to its name this time, with none of the saline mud that covered every inch of my Jeep the last time I crossed it. We donate our rock offerings to Traveler's Monument, read the secret inscription on the plaque, top off our fuel, and then enter Afton Canyon. It is quickly apparent that the wash through Afton Canyon has recently seen a lot of water. Navigation is reduced to picking our way through debris, water crossings, and steep banked sandbars while generally heading in the correct direction. The route is challenging, wet, and rewarding. A couple of yikes come across the radio. With this much water in the normally dry section of the wash, I start worrying about our final water crossing near the Afton Canyon campground. I wade out into the water and estimate it to be nearly 4 feet deep and a couple hundred feet across. With a 3.5-inch lift and 35-inch tires, I'm relatively confident I can cross safely. When my front passenger tire drops into a submerged rut, though, the water is nearly hood high. I reassure myself that the bow wave I've created by entering slowly and maintaining a steady pace will do its job and keep water mostly out of the engine bay and its air intake location. I keep waiting for a drop into deeper water, but it never comes. After a few breathless seconds that seem like minutes, I pull up on the other side, safe and sound, fighting the strong urge to drive back through it again. We get the other rigs and trailers through safely, even though the water briefly came over the top of the Land Rover's hood. It is a climatic ending to our adventure. We're all sad for the trip to end, but happy for more shared adventures and memories. After 3.5 days and 147 off-road miles through the desert, it is a strange juxtaposition to watch water draining from our wet rigs into the dry desert sand. But then again, sometimes deserts are more about water than sand.
Loa began as a village cobbler in Bavaria in 1923. 102 years later, Loa is still based in that same village and is still crafting premium outdoor performance footwear under the world's most stringent environmental and labor standards. From mountaineering, backpacking, hunting, tactical and hiking boots to trail running shoes, Loa is recognized worldwide for the uncompromising quality, fit, and comfort that has made Loa Boots simply more.
Underground cities and fairy chimneys, a journey through Cappadocia. Words and photos, Heidi Brandis. The vehicle bounces hard over another ridge and I grab the roll bar, grateful for both it and the lingering effects of the rocky consumption dulling the impact. I can't stop laughing at the jostling adventure, but it could have more to do with Turkey's infamous alcoholic drink than the ride itself. We're chasing the setting sun with Cappadocia Jeep Tourou through Cappadocia's fairy chimneys, towering rock spires of volcanic ash shaped by millions of years of wind and water into forms that seem more psychedelic art than geology. Our guide points to a particularly tall formation shaped like a mushroom, but I'm too mesmerized by the play of afternoon light on the rose-colored stone to hear his explanation. In this ancient corner of Turkey, I'm discovering how human ingenuity and desperation carved entire cities into the soft volcanic rock below ground and high into the air. The underground metropolis of Derinkuyu, 8 levels deep and once home to 20,000 people, and the soaring rock cutout churches of Gorome stand as testaments to the lengths humans will go to survive, to worship, and to create beauty even in the darkest times. My slightly drunken exploration of these wonders, courtesy of an epic carpet negotiation earlier that day involving several glasses of Rocky and a lively haggling session with a man who asked to marry me, would teach me more about human resilience and creativity than any history book ever could. Traveling through time along the Silk Road. My travel buddy Lyle and I joined this 12-day tour of the treasures of Anatolia with Exotica Travel for the simple reason that I had dreamed of visiting Turkey again. 5 years earlier, I spent 5 days in Antalya in southern Turkey, which only whetted my appetite for this region that boasts of some of the oldest settlements in human history. Although I'm not the biggest fan of group bus tours, the company offered more destinations in Turkey, along with an expert guide named Mehmet Emin, and I couldn't have navigated the region better on my own. After 2 full days of wandering the cobblestone streets of Old Town Istanbul, munching on roasted chestnuts and navigating squatty potty toilets that cost 10 lira to use, we embarked on an adventure into the central region of Turkey. After visiting Ankara, with its reverent Antikabar monument and burial site of Ataturk, the father of Turkey, we bounced our way towards Cappadocia. Earlier that day, we stopped at a caravanserai, one of the ancient inn fortresses that once dotted the Silk Road through Turkey like pearls on a string. Standing in the massive courtyard, I closed my eyes and listened for echoes of the past. The ghosts of neighing horses, the calls of merchants, and the mingling of a dozen languages as traders from China to Venice met under these same stones. They still spiced the air. The walls bore the marks of countless fires, each blackened stone a testament to travelers who sought shelter here centuries ago. The caravanserai's massive archway framed the landscape exactly as it did when Marco Polo might have passed through it. I ran my hand along the worn stone of the crumbled hammam, or bathing area, feeling the smooth depressions left by countless butts and feet. These walls have witnessed the passage of spices, silks, and stories for nearly a millennium. Our modern bus, with its clean lines and contemporary comfort, felt almost sterile compared to this living piece of history. Turkish booze, traditions, and faith. The Rocky hits differently at elevation. That's what I told myself as I ran my fingers over the impossibly intricate patterns of my new hand-woven Turkish carpet, trying to recall exactly how many glasses of the anise-flavored spirit I'd shared with merchant. The purchase had been planned. Few of the best ones are in Turkey. But after 3 hours of the boozy Rocky, passionate negotiations, and increasingly animated conversations about how much I could pay for such a treasure, I'd become the proud owner of a hand-woven masterpiece that would cost triple in Istanbul's Grand Bazaar. Before coming to this old world, I had read about the underground cities of Turkey. I have a knee-shaking fear of heights, but you show me a hole in the ground and I want to crawl in. As we explored the ashy towers of Cappadocia, I could see the remains of homes carved into the spiraling skyward volcanic ash formations that make up the Love Valley. Still tipsy from the liquor and gleeful from my spur-of-the-moment purchase, the landscape seemed unreal. The next morning, fortified by strong Turkish coffee that chased away my hangover, we toured the region's famous rock churches, and our bus bounded over the rough terrain, each jolt a reminder of last night's carpet negotiations. We traveled onward through the Rose Valley as the morning sun transformed the pink-hued rocks into something almost flesh-like, and any discomfort vanished when we reached our first stop, the Goremi Open Air Museum. This UNESCO World Heritage Site houses some of the most remarkable rock-cut churches in Cappadocia. The dark church's additional entrance fee to the main museum ticket was worth every extra lira. After my eyes adjusted to the dim light, I gasped audibly. The frescoes, protected from sunlight and the elements for centuries, exploded with color as if they had been painted yesterday instead of a millennium ago. Biblical scenes danced across curved ceilings and walls. Christ, Pantocrator, the Last Supper, the betrayer of Judas, each rendered with a vibrancy that made me recalibrate my understanding of ancient art. In the Apple Church, named for the now lost orchard, red ochre designs painted directly onto the rock told stories of saints and martyrs. The artists who created these masterpieces worked by oil lamplight while standing on scaffolding in the darkness, their faith driving them to create beauty that would endure centuries. The blue pigments, made from precious lapis lazuli, carried along the Silk Road from Afghanistan, still radiate an otherworldly intensity. We stopped at a small church carved high into a fairy chimney, accessible only by a series of worn steps cut into the rock. The climb was precarious, but the reward was intimate. A tiny chapel where a handful of worshipers would have gathered, their prayers echoing off walls still adorned with faded frescoes. Inside, the space was no larger than a modern bathroom, but it felt infinite. Crosses carved into the ceiling, worn smooth by time, caught the slanting sunlight. In one corner, a small window perfectly framed a distant fairy chimney, creating a natural icon of Cappadocia's distinctive landscape. I sat on a worn stone bench and wondered about the individuals who had perched here centuries before, finding solace in this elevated sanctuary. Going underground. Durenkyu, even the name sounds like a secret whispered in the dark. 8 levels deep into the earth, this underground city sheltered thousands of people from persecution. As Mehmet led us through the narrow passages that forced even the most claustrophobia-free among us to duck and squeeze, I couldn't help but marvel at the ingenuity of its ancient architects. The city's ventilation system, anchored by a 55-meter-long shaft, still pulls fresh air into chambers that haven't seen regular inhabitants for centuries. The descent into Durenkyu felt like traveling through time itself. Each level could be sealed off with the massive millstone doors, rolled into place like ancient blast doors. I placed my hand on one, feeling the cool, rough surface of the volcanic rock, imagining the desperate moments when these stones might have been all that stood between life and death for the Christians hiding from Roman persecution or Arab raids. "Look up," Mehmet said, pointing to the ceiling of what was once a communal kitchen. Blackened by thousands of ancient fires, the rock still bore the sooty evidence of many meals prepared in darkness. Nearby, a stable large enough for dozens of animals reminded us that this wasn't just a hiding place. It was a fully functioning city. The people who lived here didn't just survive. They created a community complete with churches, schools, and storage rooms for wine and oil. Returning to our hotel later that evening, the contrast between the ancient underground city and our contemporary accommodations couldn't have been starker. Where Durenkyu's inhabitants carved minimal spaces for survival, our hotel offered every modern convenience. Yet something about the underground city's ingenious design and resourceful use of space made our hotel's amenities feel almost excessive. A land woven in time. The underground city of Cappadocia teaches something profound about human resilience and creativity. In Durenkyu, every challenge was met with innovation. The ventilation shafts had doubled as wells. The sophisticated security systems of rolling stone doors. The communal spaces that maintained civilization even when it had to retreat beneath the earth. The rock hut churches remind us that even in times of persecution, humans found ways to create beauty and preserve their faith. Our comfortable hotel, with its modern amenities and efficient service, represents another kind of innovation, one that helps modern travelers explore these ancient wonders. Although it lacks the soul-stirring history of the caravanserai or the profound impact of Durenkyu, it serves its purpose as a comfortable base for adventures into the past. As night fell over Cappadocia, the fairy chimneys became silhouettes against a star-filled sky. I watched for the famous hot air balloons being inflated for their dawn flights, but their signal burner fires were out thanks to an incoming storm. A belly dancer shimmied her hips to a live DJ, and we drank gin and sodas to the Turkish music as she floated across the dance floor. The landscape here in Cappadocia feels both timeless and immediate, a place where past and present don't just meet, but dance together, like the swirling patterns of my new carpet, like the milky swirls in my glass of Reiki, like the belly dancer's hips. The rational part of my mind knows that the Reiki is partly responsible for these philosophical musings. But here in Turkey, with its fairy chimneys glowing in the starlight, and its ancient caves holding centuries of secrets, a little philosophical intoxication feels entirely appropriate. After all, I'm not just visiting a destination. I'm experiencing a place where human history is written in stone, painted in precious pigments, and woven into carpets that still carry stories from the Silk Road to the modern world. As I prepare for bed, I think of countless travelers who have passed through this land before me. From the merchants who found refuge in the caravanserai, to the Christians who carved cities beneath the earth, each left their mark on Cappadocia's landscape. The Reiki bottle is empty now, but the magic of this place needs no enhancement. In Cappadocia, every stone has a story, and every story leads deeper into the heart of human experience.
The adventure is calling. Are you ready to answer? Front Runner Outfitters equips explorers, overlanders, and outdoor enthusiasts with rugged gear that takes you far beyond the beaten path. From durable roof racks to clever storage solutions and all the accessories you need, Front Runner Outfitters has you covered. Every product is built tough, tested in the wild, and ready to handle your next journey no matter where it leads. It's time to pack up and live your adventure. Explore our full lineup at frontrunneroutfitters.com.
Camping with Cats, the ins and outs of outdoors adventure with feline friends, by Shaylee Super. Dogs have always been known as great outdoor adventure buddies. No one bats an eye when they see a happy canine hanging their head out the window on the way to the park or local hiking path. Coffee kiosks are prepared with treats for tail-wagging good girls and boys. They run freely along the trails, greeting strangers around each passing bend. Cats, however, receive a far more abstract response. When they hang their head out the window, feeling the breeze through their whiskers, children shout excitedly and point their tiny fingers. They end up on social media stories on just about every hiking trail. Questions are asked, and confused looks grace the faces of everyone who suddenly comes across a cat miles into the forest. Cats can make great adventure partners, even if we've been conditioned to believe they'd rather sleep 18 hours a day on the couch. And although that might be true for some of our furry feline friends, many are itching to come along for the journey. Analyzing if your cat is up for adventure starts with leaning into their personality. The best adventure cats are the mischievous ones, likely the problem pets at home. They are easily bored, always breaking into every cupboard, and constantly at the door, begging to get out and explore. But quiet cats can make good adventuring companions too. It's about examining their comfort level and happiness outdoors. Similar to how training dogs is easier when they are puppies, the same goes with cats. The earlier you can begin exposing and building trust with them in the outdoors, the easier it becomes. Peak training age for kittens ranges between 6 and 12 months. Cats are creatures of habit, and integrating exploration into a routine at an early age can offload a lot of additional training required for older cats. It's been over 6 years since our cats, Maverick and Aspen, began hopping logs across rivers, crossing state borders, and sleeping under the stars with my husband and me. When I began fostering them at 4 weeks old, Maverick was the nuisance of the kennel, breaking out of the cage and running free whenever I entered the shelter. Aspen, weak, and the litter's runt, could barely maneuver around the cage. He stirred clumsily, safeguarding his back leg, which limped behind the rest of his tiny body. It was a birth deformity that caused no pain but made learning to walk a burdensome task. They were complete opposites in the litter, one strong and one weak, one daring and one cautious. When we decided to keep them both, there was never a plan to train them as adventure cats, only to love the outdoors with the two humans who took them. At the time, our lifestyle revolved around the outdoors, and the entryway to our cramped apartment backed up to thick woods a mile deep. One spring day, when the cats were around 7 months old, we decided to go for a walk along one of the many paths behind our place and see if they would follow. They'd been outside with us before, always staying close, as kittens typically do. On this new test, much to our surprise, both cats followed. Aspen hopped along like a bunny, learning to maneuver with his birth deformity. Maverick confidently climbed trees, sometimes too high, and hopped over rocks while crossing creeks. Each time we ventured out, we went a little further into the woods, repeating the cycle until a complete circuit became our daily routine. They became adventure cats quickly because of the consistency we put into daily walks when they were young. Additionally, they were repeatedly exposed to car rides and new environments. We'd load them up in the car to accompany us, even when traveling short distances, frequently visiting thrilled employees at coffee kiosks for treats and scratches. Traveling was all they knew, so there was little to fear. Cats are creatures of habit, and installing positive travel routines from a young age significantly prepares them for a future of travel and adventure. When we started toying with the idea of making them adventure cats, the internet made it seem nearly impossible, yet consistency in training made it feel easy. During this time, Maverick and Aspen also taught us the importance of listening to their wants and needs. Both cats traveled exceptionally well, but in two very distinct ways. Maverick wanted to partake in every adventure, big and small. At 10 months old, he hiked 10 miles along the Appalachian Trail to the highest point in Virginia, primarily off-leash. We could do miles and days of hiking, camping, and exploring, yet he would still claw and meow at the car window, begging for more. Aspen showed us his love for comfort, including king-sized hotel beds with extra fluffy pillows and his plush bed in our four-wheel camper. Hiking wasn't his forte, although he'd learned to trek with his limp exceptionally well. We quickly learned that if a trip included many miles in the backcountry, Aspen preferred to be left at home for a few days with lots of belly rubs on return. In the years since those initial training sessions, we've traded the woods for mountains and tents for truck campers. The cats have been coast to coast, from the sandy beaches of South Carolina to the deserts of California. We trust them entirely in the outdoors, and they behave better than many dogs. Both know the rules on camping trips: stay close, wear tracking collars, and no exploring after dark. Aspen is typically found lounging on the camper bed, coming out for an occasional dirt roll next to the truck. Maverick hunts mice until dusk, usually followed by a few sets of the zoomies through camp. Each night ends the same: a can of wet food for dinner and a closed hatch until dawn rays pierce the canopy of trees the following morning. Camping with cats is both easier and more complicated than it seems, and I'm well aware of the many questions that surround this eccentric lifestyle. For those of you looking for advice for camping with cats, consider the following three key areas: environment, preparedness, and safety. Environment. Avoid taking cats to crowded trails, campgrounds, or parks, especially on the first few outings. Spooking a cat in a hectic environment is one of the best ways to ensure they will never enjoy the outdoors. In addition, avoid wide open spaces. Fields or deserts can induce higher stress factors in our feline friends. Letting them explore on leash somewhere like a national forest or dispersed campsite is the safest and most effective way to get a cat comfortable in new areas. Preparedness. Only leave your house for a cat venture with a harness, leash, tracking collar, cat treats, and cat backpack. The Tractive Pet Tracker is a GPS tracking device that pinpoints the exact location of your pet. If the worst-case scenario occurs and you are separated from your cat, the Tractive app will tell you exactly where they are. It also enables ringing and lighting up the collar for easy detection in thick brush or terrain. The catch with the Tractive is that it only works in places with reception. If camping in isolated areas out of service, a Bluetooth tracking device, such as a Tile, is the most reliable safety net. This device pairs with any smartphone and can beep or ring the tag in a 300-foot radius. The range is smaller and less accurate than the Tractive, but it works in even the country's most remote areas. Cats need a safe space outdoors, which is part of the reason they don't enjoy wide-open environments such as deserts or fields. Part of training cats for adventures is building trust and providing a safe space for them as part of that process. This is where the pet backpack becomes one of the most critical items for adventure cats. If an unexpected danger surprises a cat outdoors, training your furry family member to retreat to the backpack as a safe space is the difference between a stressful and enjoyable experience. Beyond safety, even the world's best adventure cat can't hike the same distances as us, and a well-ventilated backpack allows them to join on adventures where terrain or mileage is too much for their four tiny legs. Safety. Two common questions regarding cats are, do they actually enjoy it? And is it safe? Contrary to popular belief, many cats enjoy and thrive outdoors when exploring safely with their humans. Cats have incredible instincts. Trust them. In many ways, they are smarter than us. If your cat is typically comfortable outside but is reluctant to join you on an adventure, trust it. They could be sensing something you can't. Leashes are one of the most controversial talking points when camping with cats. Many cats are happiest being on a leash throughout their lives, but it's not unheard of for cats to be off-leash. How do you know when a cat can be trusted off-leash? The answer is similar to a dog. There is never a defined moment or time, but trust will be built. And when that day comes, only you will know. It is not worth sacrificing your cat's safety if it never feels right. If you do train your cat off-leash, additional safety equipment includes a hawk vest and breakaway collar. Attacks on cats and small dogs are rare but can happen. Not all cats will enjoy traveling and the outdoors. Some cats exhibit incredible amounts of stress in vehicles that may never dissipate. If that's the case, chances are they are happier, curled up on the sofa with the cat sitter swinging by once a day. Cats are some of the most intelligent and intuitive creatures on Earth. Safety and adventure begins with listening to them. When you take them on that first trip, what do they tell you? Are they miserable the entire time? Are they scared but curious? Are they interested but timid? The answer to your adventure cat's future is likely right before you. There is only one last thing to do. Find your cat and ask them if they're ready to go camping. Editor note. For those who are more dog people than cat people, we featured an article entitled Traveling with Dogs in Issue 38. You can read a digital version of that issue by scanning the QR code and logging in with your subscription credentials or by subscribing at www.outdoorby4.com.
Shop America's only integrated soft truck bed system. A load-rated rack plus a 100% waterproof canvas cap. The Wild Top is the ultimate cargo space maximizer. Number one in accessibility, giving you complete access on all sides, and number one in versatility. The Wild Top protects your gear underneath and carries everything you need from worksite to campsite on its patented top rack. Plus, you get an industry-leading 2-year warranty backed by 30 years of ingenuity in the truck accessory industry. Free shipping. Going on now at wildtop.com. That's wild-top.com.
Driven by a Dream. The Story of Mark A. Smith and His Life of Adventure by Frank Ledwell. A concoction of mud and clay swirled around and flung off into the air like miniature torpedoes, scattering in every direction and leaving a sheen of reddish-brown on everything in its wake. I grimaced as my TJ Rubicon navigated across the Mars-like landscape in a canyon carved from the basement of time. The setting was Peladero Canyon in West Texas for Jeep Jamboree. The story of Jeep Jamboree and how it evolved into one of the most recognizable and respected Jeep vehicle series of events anywhere in the world is a story of one man's passion and persistence. It's a story of a man responsible for helping to develop the Jeep vehicle brand into a modern legend. It's the story of Mark A. Smith. It all began in December 1926 when Mark was born in Globe, Arizona to Mark A. Smith Sr. and Mele Smith. Mark's father was a self-educated mining engineer and his mother a buyer for Macy's throughout the Bay Area. As a little boy, Mark had a dog named Jeep after Eugene the Jeep in Popeye cartoons. The pair spent their days exploring and enjoying the outdoors, catching lizards and other critters, and creating in him an adventurous spirit that thrived throughout the rest of his life. As Mark grew into a young man, the world had been thrust into World War, and at the time, he had a job with the Ordnance Department of the Alameda Naval Air Station and was offered a draft deferment. However, Mark wanted to be a Marine, and in an effort to avoid being drafted into the Army once he turned 18, he chose to instead enlist at 17 with the Marine Corps, and in December 1944, he was sworn in and sent off to boot camp. He eventually served on a newly commissioned ship that circumnavigated South America shortly after the Japanese had surrendered, then headed to Europe and eventually stateside before discharging to civilian life. Mark later attributed his time in the Marine Corps as a catalyst for his successes, helping him to build a confidence that led him to his wife, Irene, birth of his four children, and a career as varied as the bookends of his life. Early in Mark's professional career, he was a logger who cut and sold Christmas trees in the winter. He eventually formed his own lumber company, served as deputy sheriff for El Dorado County in California, and started the Jeepers Jamboree over the Rubicon Trail, a trail he first crossed in 1954 using the first Jeep he ever bought, a World War II surplus Jeep for $500. He later became a real estate broker, but after a serious surgery in 1977, his outlook on life fortified a carpe diem sentiment, and he began to focus his attention to undertake a legendary adventure in Jeep vehicles that had been his dream for 12 years. An expedition that would take him and a team of passionate enthusiasts from the bottom of South America to the top of North America. A journey that would be known as the Expedición de las Américas. After doing the Rubicon Trail for so many years, Mark began looking for a greater challenge. He eventually concluded the ultimate challenge with the Jeep would be to conquer the Darien Gap, a snake and insect-infested stretch of jungle and swamp located between Panama and Colombia. It's the one stretch along the entire Pan-American Highway that is uncompleted, and until 1972, it had never been crossed successfully before, and even then, it was done by a major British Army unit comprising 250 men, and it included British Army engineers, U.S. Air Force, the Colombian Navy and Marines, and Panamanian Guardia. 8 men during that journey died in a river crossing, and it took the unit 100 days to take 2 vehicles through. Mark was determined to conquer the Darien, even if it was with only 1 Jeep and took the entire dry season to do so. As part of the planning, it eventually unfolded to include a complete traverse of South American and North American continents, and after 2 years of planning and several scouting trips to Panama, Mark and his hand-picked team of 14 North Americans began their journey in November 1978 from Tierra del Fuego after flying to Santiago, Chile, and having their 5-stock CJ7s with 4-speed manual T18 transmissions, rear track lock differential, full cage roll bars, 3 Ramsey 8,000-pound PTO winches, 2 electric winches, and Goodyear 31 by 10.5 by 15 AT tires shipped on a freighter 3 weeks earlier. As the team navigated their way through Chile then Argentina, at a time when both countries were about to go to war, then Bolivia, which had 3 revolutions in the 6-week period, and then on to Colombia, they eventually reached Turbo, Colombia, the departure point for the Darien. Mark later described Turbo as a primitive village full of drug smugglers and bandits, and he noted that he and the team slept with loaded pistols by their pillows prior to departing for the jungle. When the team finally did enter the jungle, about 6 weeks after starting their journey, history would be made. In the end, Mark and his team, 3 Colombians and approximately 25 Choco Indians and natives who helped to bushwhack the trail and build balsa wood rafts to transport the Jeeps across the Turia River, made it through the 103-mile section in 30 days, which was 2 to 4 weeks earlier than expected. The jungle was grueling, with Mark and the team battling 1.5-inch ants, mosquitoes, poisonous snakes, and a setting completely inhospitable to outsiders. The team eventually became known as the Darien Conquistadors, with commendations and fanfare upon their return home. From there, the team pushed forward through Panama, into Central America, and eventually back to the U.S. to Georgetown, California before crossing the Canadian border, then traveling through Alaska to eventually meet their end goal, Prudhoe Bay. After 5 months and 2 days, and traveling 21,000 miles, Mark and the team not only conquered obstacles, but also broke records, including the first trip ever by land from the tip to the top, done by vehicles. It also was the longest trip by land ever done, the first crossing of the Darien from north to south, the first crossing the Darien with 5 vehicles, the first time crossing the Darien by civilians and explorers, and a record time of crossing it in 30 days. The Expedición de las Américas was a success, and it was done in their Jeep vehicles. The following year, Mark was inducted into the Off-Road Motorsports Hall of Fame, and over the next several years, Mark established himself as one of the most credible off-road vehicle enthusiasts on the planet. Prior to the Expedición de las Américas, Mark was responsible for introducing the CJ7 to the media along the Rubicon Trail. His relationship with the Jeep brand was solidified going forward, and in 1982, he introduced the Jeep Cherokee. A year later, he and a colleague named Pete McClellan began building Jeep 101 courses known as Torture Tracks for Jeep dealers throughout the Southeast, and then in 1984, Mark was hired as an off-road consultant and consultant for special events for AMC Jeep. 2 years later, Mark introduced the Jeep Comanche, and then in 1987, he introduced the Jeep Wrangler YJ. Over the remainder of his career, Mark served as expedition leader for the Camel Trophy in Madagascar. He was named Four-Wheeler of the Decade. He was inducted as a member of the Explorers Club in New York, and he established Mark A. Smith Off-Roading Incorporated and Jeep Jamboree USA, working with the Jeep brand via marketing, public relations, engineering, styling, and special events throughout the world. Mark's contributions to the off-road lifestyle and his passion for Jeep vehicles over a 60-year period have led many of us to where we are today, living a go-anywhere, do-anything attitude propelled by vehicles designed to traverse the Mars-like terrain of Palo Duro, the wetlands of the Southeast, the granite of Moab, the challenges of the Rubicon, and the jungles of Panama. Mark A. Smith is a legend whose love for family, his community, and passion for adventure are experienced every day when you step into a Jeep vehicle or experience one of the 31 Jeep Jamboree events or more held throughout the U.S. He was a man driven by a dream, and every time I step into my trusty old Jeep, the spirit of Mark A. Smith and his Expedición de las Américas is a guiding light for us all, whether it's the joy of West Texas's reddish clay or anywhere along the road less traveled. I'd like to thank Jeep Jamboree USA for their help in providing many of the images featured in our print issue of this story, seen in the magazine Outdoor by Four. Mark A. Smith wrote a collection of journal entries entitled Driven by a Dream that was my resource and guide for telling a very brief version of his amazing life. You can pick up a copy of Driven by a Dream and sign up for Jeep Jamboree adventures anywhere throughout the continental USA by visiting www.jeepjamboreeusa.com.
Since 2017, 23Zero has been a leader in the ever-evolving Overland market. Whether it's high-quality products such as rooftop tents, awnings, or a variety of camp life gear, 23Zero is all about delivering adventure with a made-better principle, opting on better products, not cheaper ones. If you're looking for quality gear to get you into the backcountry and back, look no further than 23Zero. Visit them at 23Zero.com.
Stay tuned for Outdoor by Four's issue 56, highlighting a myriad of stories that'll inspire you to step out and explore the world around you. Also, be sure to visit the Outdoor by Four website at www.outdoorx4.com regularly for new tips, reviews, and stories, and join our e-newsletter to stay in the loop on the latest from Outdoor by Four. You can also follow Outdoor by Four and the adventures of our staff and contributors on Instagram and Facebook at @OutdoorX4, on TikTok and YouTube at @OutdoorX4 Magazine, and by following the hashtag OutdoorX4. Until our next issue, we wish each of you the happiest of adventures.